The Tolkien Road, Episode 190, Unfinished Tales, The Quest of Erebor. Hello everyone, welcome to Episode 190 of The Tolkien Road, The Quest of Erebor from Unfinished Tales. John here. Greta, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
You know, all things considered.
Yeah.
All things considered. I feel like that's been my preface for every time someone asks me how I am.
Yeah.
It's well, all things considered. Can't complain.
Better than I deserve.
Better than I deserve.
Yeah, we're both doing fine. Sorry it's been a little while since we've done an episode.
It's a little lame now that I think about it.
Well, it
that
is.
That we haven't recorded. It's not like we've been really doing anything else.
Well, I have actually. Thank
well,
you very
okay.
much.
Well, I guess
Some
I'm the,
of us
la-
may
I'm
have
the
been
lazy
sitting
one.
Around eating bonbons for the last month.
No, not bonbons. That would be Cadbury eggs.
Cadbury eggs.
Thank you very much.
I, on the other hand, have been rolled up my sleeves and getting down to business, keeping it real because that's what we do in the Carswell household.
At least what one of us does.
What one of us does. Tries to get everybody else to
the
keep
rest
it real.
Of us are on extended vacation.
The rest of
staycation.
The rest of them keep it fake.
Fake. So, no, yeah. Just on a staycation. That's
just on
all.
A staycation.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, as we always do, we like to give a shout out to our newest patrons. We have three to mention this time: JZ, James R, and Jonathan D.
All J names.
All J names.
All
that's right.
All J names. Jay, yeah. James, and Jonathan. Thank you, guys.
That's right. And you, too, can become a patron of the Tolkien Road by heading on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Don't forget to pledge $1 or more per episode, and you can set a monthly limit when you do it so that you don't go over a certain, you know, if we do like 50 episodes in a month, which we never do, so
it,
don't
it
worry about
happen.
That. But if you're worried about that, my point is you can be like, well, I only want to pay for one episode, and you can do that. You can do that. We, you know, we'd like it if you'd maybe pay for all the episodes, you know, $1 or $2, whatever you decide to do for all the episodes. But we appreciate any amount that you want to give us. So, yeah, head on over to Patreon and you get all kinds of awesomeness when you go over there. And, you know, got plenty of stuff over there right now. Lots of videos and mm-hmm. special articles for patrons only.
Cool.
So, and more to follow. So, also, don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us. The latest review we have up there is literally bad, and then to amplify, very bad. So, which I personally just find hilarious. So,
because John's better at not taking things personally than I am.
I
did the ugly cry over it. So.
Well,
I'm just kidding. I didn't.
We always love hearing from people, and it always makes us feel special when somebody leaves us a nice glowing
a
review.
A nice one,
because
yeah.
Most of the reviews are nice glowing reviews, and it was just kind of amazing. The bad, very like I was just like, wow, that is the epic height of trollishness right there.
It so, must be because they didn't even like give any defending examples or anything.
It's like. Bad. It's like, well, could you clarify a little bit? Very bad.
Very bad. Well, that would have made it worse or better. It would have been if it like explained more and said very, very bad.
Yeah.
It just kept going like that.
That reminds me that there's like this Family Guy thing years ago where something like, you know, something said that to Peter, the Family Guy character, and said something like, nasty to him, and then like he was like, well, what do you mean? And they were like, they kind of just said the same thing but added another word to it, and he's like, oh, you're right, I never thought of it that way. Like, oh, very bad. Oh, okay, that makes
now
I see what
now
you're
we understand.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for clarifying.
Anyway, and we'd love to hear from you as always at TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com. Follow us also on Facebook and Twitter. Bottom line, we love to hear from people, mm-hmm. the good or the bad. We prefer the good.
Of course.
And we kind of wonder, like, why are you going to bother writing us just to say nasty things? But we'll hear you, and we're always open to constructive criticism, too.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
And speaking of, we get a good amount of, you know, but it's like in the spirit of like dialogue and of deepening mm-hmm. our mutual knowledge of Tolkien things, which is what we're here to do, right?
Yeah.
So, and by the way, I think, you know, we've had all this mail. We still have a mailbag full of stuff that we haven't gotten to yet, left over from the last mailbag episode. And I think what I want to do going forward, you know, we're always kind of like evolving to better serve and make this podcast better and better and keep up with everything. And so what I think I'm going to try and start doing, at least for the next couple of episodes, is just having one letter that we kind of talk about at the end. Right.
Oh, okay.
So that we can kind of go through some of this stuff.
That's
and
a good idea.
I'm going to try and be a little better about just, responding to everybody who sends notes, just so I don't get this big backlog and feel all bad when I don't respond to people. Because we really appreciate every single thing that we get from everybody. It's just, it's a lot, and there's not always time in the day to get to all of it. Mm-hmm. So,
that's
our plan
idea.
Is every, you know, I think we're going forward, at least for now, until the plan changes, we're going to have a letter of the episode to kind of respond to and
Sounds
talk
great.
About on air.
Okay.
So continue writing us, and hey, always with SpeakPipe, you can send us voicemail and be the next to leave and leave us a voicemail, and you'll get heard on the next episode regardless. So just go onto the website and use SpeakPipe. All right. Couple of quick announcements before we dive into the quest of Erebor. I've created a new video series on the Silmarillion. It's an 8-part guide to the Silmarillion, and the videos are about 5 minutes long each, and they're posted on YouTube. There's 4 of them up right now. The other 4 should be up in the next couple of weeks. Probably rolling one out every couple of days for the next week or 2 weeks or so. And you just have to go to the Tolkien Road Podcast YouTube channel. These videos are really cool. They feature beautiful artwork from a number of different Tolkien artists who make like really beautiful work. And so it's worth checking these things out just to see their artwork alone, and then kind of be able to go and follow through on the links to their artwork and look at more of their artwork. So because there's a lot of really cool different takes on, like artistic takes on scenes from all the Tolkien mythology out there. So definitely go check those out over on my YouTube, over on the Tolkien Road Podcast YouTube channel. And really the videos are designed to give you the basics for a good first time read of the Silmarillion. The other thing we wanted to mention is our plan for the podcast for the foreseeable future is to do kind of it's kind of a third age deep dive. But it's the third age before, it's kind of the third age Mathems, right? The third age odds and ends, the third age before the great years of the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings, as they're known in Appendix B. So
we're done with the second age?
For now, yeah.
Okay.
But there's a lot to go into. So, you know, we've got like what we're doing today, the quest of Erebor, and there's several other chapters and unfinished tales on different aspects of the third age. We're also going to look at the lost chapters, as they're known from The Hobbit, which were the version of The Hobbit that Tolkien tried to write towards the end of his life that was more in the style of The Lord of the Rings. There's 3 chapters that exist from that effort.
Cool.
So we'll do some episodes on those. And we're going to look at the graphic novel that exists for The Hobbit as well, which I've been wanting to do for a while. And then we'll also just spend some time maybe going into the Appendix B of Lord of the Rings and into the history of the Third Age. There's a lot of detail in there that I have never spent much time studying, but we've been doing this family read-aloud of the Lord of the Rings because I have an intense desire to torture my children with this. And
with the hope that they will come to love it.
With the deep desire, fatherly desire that they'll come to love it like I do, but... but anyway, and I think they are enjoying it, by the way. But when you read through The Lord of the Rings, it's overwhelming how much depth to the history. Like, you know, talking about like just the whole first book, right, in Fellowship of the Ring, where they're traveling through Eriador from the Old Forest, and they have the run-in with the Barrow-wight, and they're on Weathertop, and you hear all these different like little snippets of the history, the Third Age history of Eriador, because this is 3,000 years into the Third Age, and there's just so much of that. It's in Appendix B, and I assume in other places as well that I want to dive into and spend some time in, because I think it'd be cool to learn more about that.
Yeah, that sounds great.
So,
well, so now I know the plan too.
That's the plan. Yeah. All right.
Cool beans.
I try to keep Greta in the dark on these things so I can just spring it on her.
Well, I like to be surprised.
Yes.
So it works out.
Surprise. All right. So, Unfinished Tales, The Quest of Erebor. We're going to do this in two parts. So the next episode will be on the appendices of this chapter. We're going to focus on the main substance and the notes of this chapter here today. So, background of this. This is from Unfinished Tales. It's part three in the section of the Third Age, on the Third Age. The main part of this chapter consists of a telling of the Hobbit from Gandalf's larger perspective, recounted after the destruction of the One Ring and the fall of Mordor. We'll discuss the appendix on the next episode, because there's actually a couple different versions of this itself. But one thing I think it's helpful to establish from the outset of our discussion is that this is told in the style of a frame narrative, right? So do you remember what a frame narrative is, Greta?
No.
Uh-oh.
Well, I know what a narrative is. So a frame narrative, I guess, is a narrative that is framed from a particular point of view.
A narrative that is framed? I wanted to high five you right then and there.
from a particular point of view.
Good, right. So that the basic idea is that a frame narrative is, it kind of provides a larger picture or a larger setting in which a story is being told. So within, you have like a multi-layered story, right?
Yes.
So really, this story is really about Gandalf telling some of the Fellowship about how he came to convince Thorin to take Bilbo with him on the quest of Erebor.
So it's a story within a story.
Exactly.
Is that what you said?
Right.
Okay.
So the frame here is that Gandalf is recounting all of this to Frodo, Peregrine, Merry Aydoc, and Gimli and Minas Tirith after the coronation of King Elessar. So this is
the end of Lord of the Rings.
This is happening at some point that we're not told about in book six of Lord of the Rings, right? Before the hobbits make the journey back to, after
I see.
Aragorn is crowned.
Yes. Okay.
But before the hobbits make the journey back to the Shire.
Okay. So is this, like, did Tolkien write this and then, like, was it originally part of The Hobbit and then it was removed, or he wrote it separately?
No, he wrote this separately to kind of, I think, provide for himself a larger more background on the connection between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
Right? How it all fits together.
Yeah.
So it's not like this is something that was left out of The Hobbit. It's just, it was a writing that he did. And he did a lot of writings like this, right? Where he was trying to work out how it all fit together, right?
Gotcha.
And not all of it, you know, made it into The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings or Silmarillion, but these things were nevertheless important to him. That's just the kind of writer he was, right?
Yeah.
That gets back to the whole magnificent verisimilitude of Tolkien's works, right? Mm-hmm. Like that he worked out everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
He knew how it all, or he had an idea of how it all worked out at the very least, right?
Yes.
He wasn't just kind of making up things here and there to make for a good story, a ripping good yarn or something
like that.
So
this is like a way of connecting the dots, basically.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, for some of the dots. Yeah.
Some of the, right. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So just to kind of provide the synopsis of what we have here, we find that Gandalf orchestrated the quest for Erebor to include convincing Thorin to bring Bilbo along. He had been pondering the defense of the West against the Shadow, and that's why he wanted to orchestrate this. That was part of the reason he wanted to orchestrate this in the first place. He was having problems with Saruman. He decides to go to the Shire for a short rest, and that's when he's reminded of Bilbo and who he had known some time before. He meets up with Thorin by accident, who is hungry to retake Erebor, the Lonely Mountain. He has a mysterious desire to include Bilbo in Thorin's quest, and so he works to convince Thorin to include Bilbo. And he admits he has a larger purpose to Thorin than just the quest of Erebor. He has to finally admit that to Thorin. And then we find out a little bit at the end about the Battle of Erebor during the War of the Ring, in which King Dain, the one who succeeded Thorin as the King Under the Mountain, as well as King Brand, who is the grandson of Bard the Bowman, how they both defended Erebor against an army of Mordor that came into the north to attack them during the War of the Ring. So these are all some of the things we find out. All right, so I guess we'll start out by talking about Gandalf orchestrating the quest for Erebor and why he even cared about that in the first place. It says he was very troubled. He says, "I cannot remember all the tale now, but we gathered that to begin with, Gandalf was thinking only of the defense of the West against the Shadow." So this is going back to before the Hobbit. Gandalf's already concerned about the defense of the West against the Shadow. He knows the Shadow is this growing thing in the East, and he's worried that even Rivendell could be within its reach,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So he says he was very troubled at the time, for Saruman was hindering all of his plans. He knew that Sauron had arisen again and would soon declare himself, and I knew that he was preparing for a great war. How would he begin? Would he try first to reoccupy Mordor, or would he first attack the chief strongholds of his enemies? I thought then, and I am sure now, that to attack Lorien and Rivendell as soon as he was strong enough was his original plan. It would have been a much better plan for him, and much worse for us. So this is where Gandalf is really what he's troubled about, and why he starts thinking about why he's even thinking about these questions in the first place, because he's aware that Sauron has returned and is planning something. And so he's trying to devise how he's going to make the council, the White Council, right? Saruman, Galadriel, Elrond, understand this and plot against Sauron, mm-hmm. like start working against Sauron. He says, "You may think that Rivendell was out of his reach, but I did not think so. The state of things in the north was very bad. The kingdom under the mountain and the strong men of Dale were no more. To resist any force that Sauron might send to regain the northern passes in the mountains and the old lands of Angmar, there were only the dwarves of the Iron Hills, and behind them lay a desolation and a dragon. The dragon Sauron might use with terrible effect. Often I said to myself, I must find some means of dealing with Smaug, but a direct stroke against Dol Guldur is needed still more. We must disturb Sauron's plans. I must make the council see that." So it's really interesting to me that Gandalf is worried. You kind of think about, and when you're reading The Hobbit, you don't really think about Smaug having any connection to Sauron whatsoever. But in Gandalf's mind, he's like, well, if Sauron can somehow convince Smaug to work for him,
mm-hmm.
right?
That makes Sauron that's not much dangerous.
Exactly. That could be a huge problem.
More dangerous, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At least Smaug right now is just kind of, sitting on a pile of gold inside this mountain, not really bothering anybody. Right. But
if Sauron can mobilize them.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. We've seen in the Silmarillion what a dragon, right, is capable of doing, the kind of destruction it's capable of doing when it was working for Morgoth, right? So
mm-hmm.
You can only imagine what that would have meant if Sauron had been able to have a dragon working for him. So Gandalf is actually thinking about that, right? That's part of the calculus in all of this. But we find out he's actually kind of moving down the road. And he's moving down the road, heading to the Shire for a short rest after having been away from it for more than 20 years. And during that time, he gets near Bree and he stumbles upon, or he's overtaken by Thorin Oakenshield, who lived there in exile beyond the northwestern borders of the Shire. And it turns out that Thorin is kind of troubled, mm-hmm. too, about Erebor. And, we should understand why, right? Because Thorin feels like he's been, he's kind of, Thorin is not only mad that he, that he's not king of the place that he should be king of,
mm-hmm.
but he kind of feels like he's letting down his ancestors,
right,
by not doing more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Dwarves have a strong sense of loyalty and family and friendship. And so, yeah, he probably feels like he should be doing something.
Exactly. Yeah. It says he was troubled too, so troubled that he actually asked for my advice. So I went with him to his halls in the Blue Mountains, and I listened to his long tale. I soon understood that his heart was hot with brooding on his wrongs and the loss of the treasure of his forefathers, and burdened too with the duty of revenge upon Smaug that he had inherited. Dwarves take such duty very seriously. So Gandalf promises to find some way to help him, and but he's not really he's not entirely sure how to do that right now. And so he arrives, like, you know, his original destination was the Shire, so he arrives in the Shire, and he says that he had been attracted by Bilbo long before as a child and a young hobbit. He had not quite come of age when he had last seen him, but he had stayed in his mind ever since with his eagerness and his bright eyes and his love of tales and his questions about the wide world outside the Shire. I really like this part, like, of just kind of thinking about, like, why was Gandalf drawn to Bilbo in the first, like, what? Because it seems kind of random in The Hobbit when Gandalf, you know, we're seeing a lot of it through Bilbo's perspective in The Hobbit, and it probably felt a little bit random to Bilbo too, that here's this. I mean,
Gandalf picked him.
It does
out of,
like, it has that sense of, like, randomness in the telling of the story there.
Yeah, like, why him?
He just, the wizard shows up, and it's this comical scene of, like, good morning, right?
Yes.
You know,
good morning.
Yeah, but, I mean, Bilbo's just minding his own business,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm just enjoying a nice day in the Shire, enjoying a nice smoke.
Yeah.
And this wizard comes along and starts giving me the what for, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And telling me I have to go on a journey.
And we have no idea that they've had a previous encounter or that Gandalf has been aware of Bilbo and has known something of him for a while before that.
Yeah, I think it does go into a little bit of that in The Hobbit event, like, at some point, but not, certainly not in an opening scene. You're not aware of that, right?
Right.
In The Hobbit.
Right, yeah.
And but this definitely goes into a lot more of the background, right? He had stayed, so... You just think about, like, there's some, like, you know, I think each of us, there's different people who, like, are make a striking impression on you for one reason or another, right?
Yeah.
And in some cases, that might even be, it's like, you know, like, wow, that's a really precocious child. Like, you know, that, you know, I mean, I've done some teaching, and there's certainly truth to the notion that there's certain students you have that you're just like, wow, they're really bright. Like, they're really bright and, like, kind of precocious for their age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of get where Gandalf's coming from here, right? That Bilbo just was asking all these questions about stories that other Hobbit children didn't, you know, necessarily ask about adventures and all these kinds of things. And you know, and so he gets to the Shire, and it says, He was getting talked about, it seemed. Both his parents had died early for Shire folk at about 80, and he had never married. He was already growing a bit queer, they said, and went off for days by himself. He could be seen talking to strangers, even dwarves, and that's when Gandalf, like, has an epiphany. Even dwarves. He says, suddenly in my mind, these things came together. The great dragon with his lust and his keen hearing and scent. The sturdy, heavy-booted dwarves with their old burning grudge. And the quick, soft-footed hobbit, sick at heart, for a sight of the wide world. I laughed at myself, but I went off at once to have a quick look at Bilbo, to see what 20 years had done to him and whether he was as promising as gossip seemed to make out. But he was not at home. They shook their heads in Hobbiton when I asked after him. Off again, said one hobbit. It was Holman, the gardener, I believe. And just an interesting note on him, on Holman. Apparently he was, and this is the second note in the story, it says Holman the gardener, Holman Greenhand, to whom Hamfast Gamgee, Sam's father, was apprenticed. So
they're not related by blood, Gamgees and Holman, but
no, but he was
trained,
yeah, professionally connected to Sam,
yeah.
Right? He said, off again, he'll go right off one of these days if he isn't careful. Why, I asked him where he was going and when he would be back, and I don't know, he says, and then he looks at me queerly. It depends if I meet any Holman, he says. It's the elves' New Year's tomorrow. A pity, and him so kind a body. You wouldn't find a better from the downs to the river. And so Gandalf is very hopeful at hearing this news, because he's like, oh, he's, like, interested in elves, even all these years later. Mm-hmm. He's still got this adventurous spirit.
Right.
And so he goes off. He doesn't actually meet up with Bilbo yet. But he's kind of, he's feeling kind of, pressed to make the best possible use of his time. So he goes back, finds Thorin in the Blue Mountains, right? The Ered Luin, which are to the west of Eriador, right? You know, there's the mountains right before you get to the Grey Havens. And he finds Thorin, and he tries to convince Thorin that he needs to take Bilbo with him on this quest to recover Erebor, right? And his quest to recover the Lonely Mountain.
Which probably seems kind of random to Thorin.
Well, yeah, and Thorin doesn't take it well.
No, he doesn't take it well, and I can't say that I blame him.
Yeah. Gandalf admits that he later finds out that Bilbo had changed. He was getting rather greedy and fat, and his old desires had dwindled down to a sort of private dream. Nothing could have been more dismaying than to find it actually in danger of coming true. He was altogether bewildered, and so Thorin was altogether bewildered and made a complete... I'm sorry. Bilbo was altogether bewildered and made a complete fool of himself. So I think we're getting kind of caught up closer to the time of the beginning of The Hobbit here. But it's interesting because Holman, on one hand, saw Bilbo and was like, oh, he's... And apparently the rest of the people of Hobbiton were like, oh, that's old Bilbo, the one who's always off on these foolish adventures and everything. And apparently it had become more and more of a... Even though he was still doing these things, kind of wandering off to spy glimpses of the elves and that mm-hmm. kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
It was becoming more and more of a private endeavor, right? He wasn't living it out loud, right?
Right.
He was maybe growing a little bit like, well, maybe I am just a hobbit and I need to concern myself with, you know, lesser things. And, you know, it's this picture of kind of growing greedy and fat, like kind of self-contented and, you know, just treating all those other things as a private dream, right? Not as a thing really worth pursuing, right?
Hmm.
Which in itself, yeah, if you take a step back, like that's a really kind of interesting little picture of what can sometimes happen to all of us, right? When we lose sight of the things we really feel passionate about, yeah. right?
Mm-hmm.
That we really want to like feel a call to pursue in our lives. And we grow up and we start to think like, oh, maybe I just shouldn't bother with that. Like, you know, maybe it's not that important. And, you know, mm-hmm. it'll just be kind of like my little private thing that I enjoy, my little hobby over here, right?
Yeah.
On one level, there may not be anything wrong with that, but on another level, you know, you see Gandalf looking at Bilbo here, and you're like, well, no, Bilbo, you're destined for greater things than that, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, Gandalf sees within him, like Gandalf sees that he has a role to play in helping Bilbo realize who he's supposed yeah. to be.
Yeah. To discover his potential.
Yeah.
I wonder if some of it too here with Bilbo is like he maybe is concerned about what other people are thinking about these adventures. And that could be part of the reason why he's like, I'll just keep this to myself and not really share. Because you don't really, in one sense, you don't want to open yourself up
mm-hmm.
to criticism that's unwarranted or unhelpful, right?
Right.
So I don't, while it can be seen as prideful, maybe, and caring too much about what other people think, I think there's some wisdom in that. Like, I think there are certain things that it's worth just keeping to yourself
mm-hmm.
for various reasons.
Yeah.
And I can kind of see why Bilbo maybe was, you know, not comfortable sharing this piece of his life
yeah.
with people, especially considering how hobbits in general just kind of lacked that sense of adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of being like, oh, wow, that's really cool. Like, tell me all about it. They're like, you're weird and we don't really want to have anything to do with you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to feel. I think it's rare for someone to be able to just kind of like be so self-assured about their purpose and something that they don't need others to kind of reinforce that.
Yes,
right?
I totally agree. Yep.
And to encourage them along that path. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's hard to maybe fault Bilbo entirely for that. But one other side note I wanted to mention that I think is really interesting is that Thorin's vision for this mission was to like kind of like put together a big dwarf army and go marching right. off to do war against Smaug.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And Gandalf is very uncomfortable with that because he's like, whoa, like then then they're going up against Smaug, and they're going to be like, that could be a big problem from the perspective of the shadow of Sauron from Dol Guldur, seeing this mm-hmm. army mm-hmm. marching into his, you know, across his lands and not wanting to have something to do with them, right? This could be a complete disaster. So Gandalf convinces Thorin, or argues with Thorin, that he needs to go secretly, right? And take Bilbo with him.
Yep.
And so Bilbo, not in such a good place right now. Bilbo, you know, again, Thorin, like, sees Bilbo and is like, "What, Gandalf, what are you talking about? Why do you want me to take this, like, lazy, good-for-nothing mm-hmm. hobbit with me?"
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
He's going to be a complete distraction. He's going to drag us down. You know, this is, it increases the chances that we're going to, that this is all going to end in disaster. So Thorin just is not on board with this plan at all. And Gandalf has to really do some hard work of convincing Thorin to take Bilbo along. He says, let me say this too. Gandalf had a couple of cards he hadn't yet played, and that he had the map and the key
mm-hmm.
That he had been able to get from Thrain,
right?
Who was Thorin's father, right? Who was captured? Who himself went on a mission, kind of a secret mission, back to the Lonely Mountain, but didn't quite make it, and was captured by the forces of Sauron, and was a prisoner in Dol Guldur. And so when Gandalf broke in and found Thrain there, he's able to get the map and the key.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. and so he's got those to kind of use as bargaining chips with Thorin.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Gandalf says, "That was enough for me. I knew in my heart that Bilbo must go with him, or the whole quest would be a failure. Or, as I should say now, the far more important events, by the way, would not come to pass. So I had still to persuade Thorin to take him. There were many difficulties on the road afterwards, but for me this was the most difficult part of the whole affair. Though I argued with him far into the night after Bilbo had retired, it was not finally settled until early next morning. Thorin was contemptuous and suspicious. 'He is soft,' he snorted. 'Soft as the mud of the Shire, and silly. His mother died too soon. You are playing some crooked game of your own, Master Gandalf. I am sure that you have other purposes than helping me.' 'You are quite right,' I said. 'If I had no other purposes, I should not be helping you at all. Great as your affairs may seem to you, they are only a small strand in the great web. I am concerned with many strands. But that should make my advice more weighty, not less.' I spoke at last with great heat. 'Listen to me, Thorin Oakenshield,' I said. 'If this hobbit goes with you, you will succeed. If not, you will fail. A foresight is on me, and I am warning you.'" So Gandalf really plays the wizard card here, right? Like, he's like, "Look, I don't have time to explain all this to you, but I just have this foresight, this mysterious foresight, because I'm a wizard,
mm-hmm.
that Bilbo is the key to your success in all of this," right?
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, that's interesting, right? Like, where did that foresight come from?
Well, he is a Maia.
I get it, yeah.
So that might have something to do with it.
But was it inspired, like, which... Was it inspired by one of the Valar? Like, you know, like, and let's take a step back and, like, what was Bilbo's role to play? I mean, there, you know, so he finds, so obviously the big thing is the finding of the ring, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was one big thing that Bilbo would not have happened if Bilbo had not done it, right?
Right, right.
And that may well have kept Sauron from finding it first,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But Bilbo also saves them from the spiders, right? And Mirkwood.
Yeah. I mean, he saved them from a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they definitely would have failed without him.
Right.
I mean, he helps...
The barrel riding.
He's yeah, the one he gets them, out,
gets
of
them
the,
out of the prisons.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he does a lot of stuff.
But there is the even greater thing of, like, that he finds the ring, right? That he was meant in some mysterious way to find the ring, and that maybe that's the thing.
So are you
right?
You think Gandalf knew that?
Not that he knew that he was supposed to find the ring, but he had some kind. He had this foresight on him, right? He had this
that
this,
Bilbo was going to play a really important role.
Mysterious intuition that
mm-hmm.
that he must be there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, yeah, he is a Maia, but But then I also feel like, you know, humans get those too, right?
True. I guess my question, and I'm not sure there's like an answer, a direct answer to it, but did it come from Iluvatar or did it come from one of the Valar? Like, you know, who had the knowledge to know that Bilbo needed to be on this quest? Because Gandalf doesn't seem to have known that that the reason was so that he could find the ring, right?
Right. He doesn't seem to know. Right. Yeah, that's true. I wonder if it was just kind of a gut thing. I mean, it could have just been that.
Yeah.
Like, it could have just been Gandalf looking over kind of events and how they've played out and, you know, how just hearing that Bilbo has been seen talking to dwarves and he's like, okay, this is it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the ring didn't even have anything to do with it. Maybe it was just that he just knew somehow he was going to be a really, really pivotal player here.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, I feel like some of those gut feelings are inspired and some of them are just, you know, just our human instinct.
Yeah. Well, Gandalf's not human.
He's not human. I know. Mayan instinct.
Perhaps. All right. So, let's see here. So Gandalf and Thorin go back and forth on this question and, Thorin says, I know your fame. I hope it is merited, but this foolish business of your hobbit makes me wonder whether it is foresight that is on you and you are not crazed rather than foreseeing. So many cares may have disordered your wits.
Fair enough.
And, you know, they continue going back and forth. Thorin feels threatened at one point and finally Gandalf convinces him to take Bilbo by saying, I can say no more unless it is this. I do not give my love or trust lightly, Thorin, but I am fond of this hobbit and wish him well. Treat him well, and you shall have my friendship to the end of your days. And Gandalf says, I said that without hope of persuading him, but I could have said nothing better. Dwarves understand devotion to friends and gratitude to those who help them. Very well, Thorin said at last after a silence. He shall set out with my company if he dares, which I doubt. But if you insist on burdening me with him, you must come too and look after your darling. Good, I answered. I will come and stay with you as long as I can, at least until you have discovered his worth. It proved well in the end, but at the time I was troubled, and for I had the urgent matter of the White Council on my hands. So, ultimately, that's kind of how it played out, right? So Gandalf stays with them until Bilbo has really started to prove his worth with
right.
them.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and then they, of course, set... you know, go their separate ways from Beorn's house, right?
So Gandalf is kind of telling the story of, so this would have all happened before the dwarves all show up at Bilbo's house at the beginning of The Hobbit.
No, I think a lot of the argument, it's not always entirely clear to me. Like, some of it happens like when they're in the Blue Mountains. I think this is the way it plays out. Gandalf and Thorin meet when Gandalf is on the road to the Shire to take some rest, right? And that's when they realize they both have this kind of like desire to want to do something about Smaug and the Lonely Mountain.
Right.
Right.
So that would have been before The Hobbit begins.
So that's the first thing, right?
Yeah.
Yes, that's before The Hobbit begins. Gandalf continues his journey. Gandalf says he'll help Thorin, mm-hmm. right, if he can figure out a way.
Mm-hmm.
Gandalf continues his journey to the Shire, goes to the Shire, hears about Bilbo, and before he even sees Bilbo, he goes and he visits Thorin at the Blue Mountains, right?
Okay.
And he's like, I know you need to take Bilbo, this okay. Hobbit Bilbo.
Again, before The Hobbit begins.
Thorin's like, I think Thorin at that point was just kind of like, okay, I'll go check him out, right? And Thorin went and checked him out,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, he sees this like fat, lazy hobbit, and he's like, why would I take this guy on my quest to reclaim right. Erebor? He's right. just going to drag us down.
Yeah.
And that's where it really got ugly. And Gandalf's like, you have to. And so then I think they show up at his house. Thorin is still not convinced. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of the back and forth here is happening on that first night in Bag End, right? When Gandalf and all the dwarves are there, right.
And they're
playing, chip the glass and crack the plates. Right.
Okay.
I think in the quiet hours of that night, I think Thorin and Gandalf had a lot of this conversation and Gandalf finally just, you know, kind of convinced him that you need to take Bilbo, and I will go with you until you have understood his value, right?
Got it. Okay. Yes, that makes sense.
So, so that, you know, that's how the Quest of Erebor really began, right? And why Bilbo was included, the backstory of how Bilbo was included. He says Gandalf relates some final thoughts on, you know, Thorin. He says he was a great dwarf of a great house, whatever his faults. And though he fell at the end of the journey, it was largely due to him that the kingdom under the mountain was restored as I desired. But dying Ironfoot was a worthy successor. And now we hear that he fell fighting before Erebor again, even while we fought here. I should call it a heavy loss if he was not a wonder, rather that in his great age he could still wield his axe as mightily as they say he did, standing over the body of King Brand before the gate of Erebor until the darkness fell. So we get a little reminder that dying Ironfoot, who of course shows up at the Battle of the Five Armies, and succeeds Thorin as the king under the mountain, is still alive and he's still ruling at the time of Lord of the Rings, and he dies in the Battle of the War in the War of the Ring. At the Battle of Erebor, the Siege of Erebor. And then also Brand, who is the grandson of Bard the Bowman, who of course killed Smaug, is the king of Dale and Esgaroth. Maybe Dale, but he's the king of that kingdom of men up in the north. That's right outside the Lonely Mountain. So yeah, we learn about what happened with them and that they both unfortunately perished, but it was all in the cause of the War of the Ring and ultimately, you know, for a good cause.
So
that's and it says too that the main attack was diverted southwards, and yet even with his far stretched right hand, Sauron could have done terrible harm in the north while we defended Gondor if King Brand and King Dain had not stood in his path. When you think of the great battle of Pelennor, do not forget the battle of Dale. Think of what might have been: Dragonfire and savage swords in Eriador. There might be no queen in Gondor. We might now only hope to return from the victory here to ruin and ash. But that has been averted, because I met Thorin Oakenshield one evening on the edge of Spring, not far from Bree. A chance meeting, as we say in Middle-earth. So basically what Gandalf says there is that because of the mission of the Lonely Mountain, they're able to restore this strong place in the north, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is able, even though they're not able to defeat Sauron themselves, they're able to withstand the assaults of Sauron in the north so much that they kind of prevent there being another front breaking out that could have eventually overtaken Rivendell and other places as well, right?
Yeah.
So it's a really kind of fascinating, you know, little bit of backstory to the events of the Third Age, right? Yeah. To the events of Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
And you know, never underestimate the power of a chance meeting. You never know what's going to come of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So let's take a look at our letter of the episode. And we're probably going to do quite a few letters of the episode from Marilyn, Marilyn the librarian, who has written us a lot of stuff that we haven't gotten to yet, and so we want to make sure we get to some of her things. So she sent a note on January 7th of this year and said, "Hello, Carswells. Yes, indeed, late replies on either side are definitely to be preferred to never replying at all." Which, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for your graciousness there. She says, "First, I need to make an attribution. My line about more livestock than old MacDonald's farm was not original to me. I read it in a good review of Battle of Five Armies, and it stuck with me." So there you go. I think that was in another letter she wrote that we discussed in one of the mailbag episodes, where she said there was more livestock in the Battle of the Five Armies, the movie, than old MacDonald's farm.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
You said Marilyn should be doing this podcast instead of us. I thank you for your kind words, but I beg to differ. The value of your podcast is that you come to the material with new eyes, the beginner's mind, as the Buddhists call it, and so you have fresh responses. This was one of the things I loved the most about teaching Tolkien classes over 35 years. I was always hearing new ideas. The other value you bring is an open Catholic lens through which to view Tolkien's world and his writings. I'm sure he would appreciate that. One of the things I really enjoyed seeing during my Oxford visit was the Catholic church Tolkien attended, another facet of a fascinating human being. Yeah, I'd really love to be able to get over there and see that at some point.
That would be amazing, yeah.
She also says, I'm afraid I've lost my notes on the Latron Prime Second Age podcast, so I guess we'll never know what I had to say. I doubt it's any great loss. Well, if you do find them, let us know, because we would love to hear what you have to say.
Indeed, yes.
In response to the person who's been wondering for decades whether elves who give up their immortality start to age visibly, I suspect not. I've always thought they simply stop at whatever they looked like when they yielded up their immortality. One needn't look old to get old, as it were. Luthien certainly didn't look any older, but by all counts, and Arwen only lived on a year or so after Aragorn anyway. They only gave up their right to the Blessed Realm and to live on as long as Arda existed, though they would eventually fade, become invisible if they remained in Middle-earth without giving up their mortality. Or so I have always understood. Smooth roads to you both.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about that last part, the fading. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying I hadn't heard that before.
They would eventually fade if they remained in Middle-earth without giving up their mortality.
I guess my question for Marilyn is she saying that about those who give up their because she says they would eventually fade if they remained in Middle-earth without giving up their mortality. So anyway, I'd just be interested to know if there's a reference for that or something that she has in mind.
As opposed to what? Like, what would happen? What's the other option?
I don't know. Not fading.
Not fading. Yeah. Not becoming invisible.
I just never heard that before, I guess, is all I'm saying. Like, what, or like fading in what sense? Like becoming a wraith? I don't think becoming a wraith, but
That's interesting. Yeah. If Marilyn, if you don't mind clarifying.
Yeah.
That would be super helpful.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. Well, if you'd like to correspond with us and be heard on the podcast, send your correspondence to TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com. On the next episode, we will be discussing the rest of this chapter, The Quest of Erebor, Part 2, the appendices. And we want to say a special thanks to all of our patrons, and especially our $5 or more patrons, Eric B.,
Daniel P.,
David B.,
Chuck F.,
Ish of the Hammer,
Chris L.,
James L.,
Al T.,
Zeke F.,
James A.,
Emilio P.,
Shannon S.,
Teresa C.,
Azia V.,
Brian O.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all so much. And thanks to everybody for listening. We will talk at you next time.
We will. Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.